Text number 11. So Krishna explains the yoga system. Adyanta vanta evaisham. Loka karma vinyamita. Tukodar kastamo nishta. Shuddha manda sutrapita. Adyanta vanta evaisham. Loka krama vinyamita. Dukho darka stamonishta. Kudra manda sutrapita. Adyanta vanta evaisham. Loka karma vinyamita. Dukho darka stamonishta. Kshudra manda chacharapita. Adyanta vanta. Possessing a beginning and end. Eva, undoubtedly. Isham, of them, the materialists. Loka, achieved destinations. Karma, by one's material work. Vinyamita, produced. Dukkha, misery. Udarka, bringing as a future result. Tama, ignorance. Nishta, situated in. Kshudra, meager. Manda, wretched. Chucha, with lamentation. Arpita, filled. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. All the persons I have just mentioned obtain temporary fruits from their material work. Indeed, the meager and miserable situations they achieve bring future unhappiness and are based on ignorance. Even while enjoying the fruits of their work, such persons are filled with lamentation. Purport. Those who have grasped temporary material things, mistaking them to be the ultimate reality, are not considered very intelligent by anyone except themselves. Such foolish persons are always in anxiety because by the laws of nature, the very fruits of their work are constantly being transformed in ways neither desired nor expected. The performer of Vedic rituals can elevate himself to heavenly planets, whereas one who is atheistic has the privilege of transferring himself to hell. The entire panorama of material existence is actually uninteresting and dull, manda. One can make no real progress within the material world, therefore one should take to Krishna consciousness and prepare oneself to go back home, back to Godhead. Translation again. All the persons I've just mentioned obtain temporary fruits from the material world. Indeed, the meager and miserable situations they achieve bring future unhappiness and are based on ignorance. Even while enjoying the fruits of their work, such persons are filled with lamentation. Om Agyana Trinandasya Gananjana Shakya Chakshurmitam Yenat Smaishi Gurvena Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Asadi Gura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare So, another interesting verse and purport. So it speaks, in that chapter, Lord Krishna explains the yoga system. Lord Krishna explains so many different paths of the Vedas. He explains, at this stage, he explains fruit of work, which is generally related to the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. So when I first came to the or tried to become a devotee, like there was the word karmi was very common. And after a while, I got to know that actually the word karmi for non-devotee is not actually even the right word. Because a karmi is considered a person who follows the karma kanda section. So a karmi actually, in the very term karma, as you can understand from Bhagavad Gita, means pious activities. There's akarma, vikarma, and karma. So karma means pious activities, according to the Vedic principles. And then there's vikarma, which means impious activities, which are for degradation and bring about a hellish life. And there's akarma, which is transcendental to karma, which doesn't bring any reactions because by its nature it is beyond activities, basically. So the people we consider these days as karmis are basically bogies or vikarmis. So bogey acts only for sense enjoyment, and a vikarmi is a person who acts for sense enjoyment and creates a hellish destination for the future. Very sad. So yeah, Hidyananda Maharaj, he speaks about those bogies in the purport, and he speaks about the atheists who don't follow any principles, any Vedic principles, and their future looks very, very dark. So karmis, the followers of Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, basically they perform activities for illicit enjoyment. They want to enjoy, but they also know that there's a way to enjoy. It's not whatever, you know, you can just do whatever you want to do as long as it feels good to yourself, it's all right. That's certainly not true. And those who follow the Karma Kanda section are very much aware of it. So they know how to use the scriptures for their purposes, for their sense gratification. Because they know that this is actually the only way to really have some kind of sense gratification. Otherwise you might have some sense gratification, but it's just like, you know, it's just something which immediately brings about suffering. You know, if you look at so many activities, people go out and they get intoxicated. Well, it's in the mode of ignorance. They think it is enjoyment, but basically even from the beginning it is suffering. And afterward they have more suffering. So a karmi understands this actually has nothing to do with enjoyment. This is just suffering. So, as Krishna explains, there are so many different paths we can follow through the Vedas. And it is according to the specific modes of nature you are conditioned by. So every person in any condition basically can approach the Vedas and elevate themselves through the Vedas. So something basically for everyone. There's something for the chicken eater and the person who is attached to sex life, and you have something for anybody and everybody. So they all get something to elevate themselves. But the point is to elevate oneself. That's the whole point of the Vedas. That's why they give us some license for enjoyment. That's why they deal with so many different people on so many different levels. It's to elevate them, because they know not everybody is able to, you know, do pure devotional service to the Lord instantly. So people start from different platforms. Some start from like a higher understanding. They can go straight to worship of Vishnu. Other people have to start with Shiva. Sometimes you have people coming here to the temple and their understanding of the Karma Kanda section is incredibly low. They also go to a lot of bogus people even to support it. So your Gopa Prabhu was telling me the other day that at the Karma Kanda section everything is mentioned. Like somebody was saying, if you want to have, was it a successful relationship with your boss? Like you go and give a donation to like an animal charity. So you want to have any good relationships with your boss, you want to have some, you know, rewards from him, you donate to maybe, how do you call the animal charities here? PCA. So there's something for anybody, wherever platform you're coming from. And so Srila Prabhupada, for example, he was one time, he was in a Muslim country, and his disciples, they heard the screaming of a goat, which was just being slaughtered. And his disciples were telling him that they make the goat turn towards Mecca when they slit the throat, or they just let it bleed to death. And the disciples were telling Prabhupada, oh, isn't that horrible? And Srila Prabhupada was saying, at least they're following some kind of religious principles. So he was in that sense appreciative of it, because he knew these people have that state of consciousness. They are not meant at this stage for anything higher, but at least they're approaching God's system. And by approaching God's system, they will slowly elevate themselves. So the Vedas, therefore, you know, they're incredibly helpful, because if we wouldn't have this kind of system for ourselves, we would just keep degrading ourselves, because by nature the modes will drag us down. But the Vedas, they give some kind of restrictions, they give a system to it, and ultimately everyone is able to elevate themselves and ultimately come to devotional service to the Supreme Lord. At the same time, in the Vedas, there's a very big danger. And in that relationship, there's a very interesting part in the Bhagavad Gita. And it says, Yamimam Pushpitam Vacham Prava Dhyanta Vipachita Veda Vara Ratapata Nanyat Astiti Vadina. And so on. It's another book following. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there's nothing more than this. So this is chapter 2, 42 to 43. So here we can say Krishna warns Arjuna in that connection, and he says there's a danger if you follow the Vedas that you get bewildered by it, that you lose sight of what actually the purpose is of the Vedas. And you will get confused in that way, that you will consider that this enjoyment, this following the Vedas and doing it and living your life in the pious ways, you will think that the goal of this doing your following the Vedas is to just have some enjoyment, illicit enjoyment. And it's a very interesting part of the Bhagavad Gita if we look in the connection in which Krishna is instructing Arjuna in that way. Because we all know that the second chapter is an overview of the Bhagavad Gita. And so in that second chapter, Krishna defeats Arjuna's arguments for, like, or his reasons for not wanting to fight. Does anybody have an idea which argument that defeats? It defeats Krishna's argument that he's going to enjoy, and that he's not going to enjoy if he is killing all his, you know, friends and relatives on this field. He says, am I going to go to hell? So Krishna says, well, you know, first of all, if you die on the battlefield, you will go to heaven because you've performed your duties, you've acted according to the injunctions of Varnashram Dharma, according to the Vedas. And if you live, you will enjoy on this earth. You will enjoy the kingdom, the flourishing kingdom. And then he encouraged him, and he tells him also that, you know, if you don't do your duty, you know, forget about enjoyment. Everybody will think you're a total idiot, basically. Everybody will call you a coward. They will say you ran from the battlefield. And they will consider you insignificant. You know, who will have respect for you, you know? You're whinging here and you just, you know, want to run off. And then he says that you shouldn't fight without thinking about whatever is going to come afterward. So Krishna comes to higher levels in the conversation. He starts first from do you want to be called insignificant? And then he goes to higher levels and he tells him to not consider fruitive results from his activities. To do his duty while being equipoised, not being attached to the results. And he encourages him to give up the considerations of enjoyment. He first defeats him and says, you're not going to enjoy anyway if you not fight. You're not going to enjoy at all. And then he tells him, don't even think about enjoying. And then the verse comes about the flowery words of the Vedas, that men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resulting good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification, optimal life, they say there is nothing more than this. So he tells him to give that up. And because the next verses are that he says that those who are on this path and resolute in purpose and aim is one beloved child of the Kurus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. And he also tells them that basically that for those who are... What was the verse? The person who has attached to sense gratification, material opulence from the resolute determination of devotion service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So he tells him to give up the desire of enjoyment. He tells him to give up the Vedas. This particular Karmakanda section of the Vedas is encourages at working for fruitive results and enjoyment, because it bewilders one. If one becomes attached to that part of the Vedas, there's the determination for pure devotion service is spoiled. You will not be able to serve the Lord purely. So this is the danger of the Karmakanda section of the flower words of the Vedas. And after that one, Krishna tells him that all purposes which are served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water, and all purposes of the Vedas can be served instantly by one who knows the purport behind the Vedas. So Krishna obviously is the purpose behind the Vedas. And if we have to understand that all these sacrifices and the rituals and all this, sometimes we call the International Society for Rules and Regulations. But it's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So all these rules and regulations, like here mentioned in the Karmakanda section, are meant to encourage gradual self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is stated in the 15th chapter in the 15th verse of the 15th chapter in Bhagavad Gita. Savasya cham vriti samvisto matasmiti jnanam apuhanam cha vidaishta sabe aham eva vetyo vedanta krit veda ved eva ichaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So the Vedas give the right direction for people that they can mold their lives and go back to the Supreme Lord, go back to Godhead. And they offer knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So... But Krishna says that I am the compiler of Vedanta Sutra and that I am the goal of the Vedas. So we have to understand that this is what is meant with that all purposes which are served by a small well can be served at once by a great reservoir of water. Whatever we get into with all these regulations and all this different paths of the Vedas. And we can tell that also to our congregation members, we can tell that to people who are actually attached to these sections of the Vedas, that the Krishna is the purpose behind the Vedas. And with every tiny little, you might have so much endeavor, and you might do so much puja and so much arti, and you follow all these little paths of the Vedas. But if you follow Krishna's instructions, these are all served. If you start serving the Lord with a loving attitude, all these things are ultimately taken care of. You don't need to worship any demigod separately. You don't need to do any sacrifice or any worship. All of these things will take care automatically of if you start serving the Supreme Lord and develop love for Him. And so Vyasadeva, he is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra, and he himself is an incarnation of Krishna. And interesting enough, the commentation on the Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream of the Vedas. And Srimad Bhagavatam is there to give real understanding of Vedanta Sutra. So if we study the Bhagavatam, this is the purpose of the Vedas. So we basically have studied the Vedas in that sense. We have understood the essence of it. And I mean, Vyasadeva himself must know he wrote them. So he must know the best what to write about the Vedas for us to understand. So if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, it's perfect. Done then. And to love the Lord, as we know, is the highest perfectional understanding of the Vedas. Also, the Vedas basically, it's not possible practically in this day and age to follow the Vedic path, because you know our qualities are not there anymore, which have been there in previous ages where people were actually able to follow the Vedas. And also we don't have the opulence anymore. For example, how can we do deity worship? Like we do our little best, but we can't properly do it anymore. Not from the standard of cleanliness, not from the standard of, you know, speaking the right prayers, not of the standard of, you know, of the opulence which is needs to be done. Should put real jewels on the Lord. He should put real gold on them. So, you know, we do our little best. But originally it should be done actually differently. So we basically can't follow the Vedas anyway. But Lord Chaitanya got asked one time by Prakashananda Saraswati why he is not studying the Vedas very deeply and why he's not totally absorbed in study of Vedanta. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, my guru told me I'm a fool. And he told me to just chant Hare Krishna. So if Chaitanya says it about himself, what can we say? So the instruction is that instead of doing all the Vedic rituals, instead of following all these different sections, if we chant Hare Krishna, we'll achieve, it's like the shortcut, the transcendental shortcut. We'll get there very fast and very easily. This is here a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom. The author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. So by chanting Hare Krishna, we fulfilled all the Vedic injunctions. We've understood the Vedas perfectly. And we get the result of love of Godhead. Okay. I'm going to speak in a second about Srinivasacharya and about Gopastami. Is anybody has any questions so far? Nobody. Good. Okay, so just gonna quickly talk about Srinivas Thakur. So there's a beautiful biography called The Embodiment of Lord Chaitanya's Love by Satya Raj Das. And it's going to read from that section. And Srinivas Acharya is known as one of the most important personalities in the religious history of Bengal, and maybe and perhaps the most important Vaishnav teacher in the generation, which is coming straight after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he took initiation from Gopal Bhatt Goswami and from Jiva Goswami. He was originally, Lord Chaitanya wanted him to take initiation from Gadadhar Das Goswami, but he passed away before he could take initiation. I'm going to talk about that in a second. And also, he told him to take guidance from Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, but also they passed away before he could actually meet them. It's because it was after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed from this world, and he came always too late to actually take initiation from them. So he took initiation then from Gopal Bhatta Goswami and from Jiva Goswami. So one of the main achievements for him include that he delivered the writings of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, in Bengal, because they were stolen. And he was actually the person who organized the first Gaur Purnima festival, which is celebrating Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthday, Appearance Day. And so his parents, Gangadhara Bhattacharya and his wife Lakshmi Priya, they were very, very strong devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And they met Lord Chaitanya and surrendered under his lotus feet. And Lord Chaitanya knew that they had this desire for a son. So he fulfilled that, and they were praying in front of Lord Jagannath. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, since I'm Jagannath, I know it anyway. So he gave them the son. And Lord Chaitanya was predicting that his name would be Srinivas. And through Rupa and Sanatan, he will manifest the Bhakti Shastras. And through Srinivas, Lord Chaitanya said, I will distribute them. So Srinivas Acharya was considered a Mahapurush, a divinely empowered soul. And he was requested by, he was requested through Lord Chaitanya to take initiation from Gadadhara Pandit and receive instructions about the Srimad Bhagavatam from him. But when he met Gadadhara Pandit, Gadadhara Goswami, the first time, Gadadhara Goswami was so much in the lamentation of separation of Lord Chaitanya. And he told him, I can't teach you the Srimad Bhagavatam because it's been so drained by my tears that I made it unreadable. So then Srinivas Acharya, he went and traveled all over Bengal to get another copy of the Bhagavatam. And when he tried to return, he got to know that Gadadhara Goswami passed away in the meantime because he couldn't bear the separation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So later on, when everyone was witnessing his divine love for Krishna, for Lord Chaitanya, he was considered as Gaura Shakti and the embodiment of the energy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And everyone could understand that through him, the message of Lord Chaitanya would be widely distributed. And it says that according to Prem Vilas, Srinivas is an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy. And it said that Lord Chaitanya has broken open the doors of nectarian love of God, and the Goswamis, by writing books, had taken that nectar and placed it in the tangible vessels. Srinivas would see that these vessels were circulated amongst all sincere souls. The intimate associates of the Lord gave Srinivas instructions and advice for carrying out this mission. So Srinivas Acharya, was associating all the way through with like all the great devotees of the Lord. He was associating with many of the six, with some of the six Goswamis. He was taking instruction from Janavi Devi, who was the wife of Lord Nityananda, and Vishnupriya Mataji, the widow of Lord Chaitanya. And he was... He was sent by Jiva Goswami together with Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu throughout northern India, and he was spreading there the Goswami's teaching. And then Bhakti Ratnakara was said that Srinivasacharya became the greatest preacher of that time. And as I mentioned, like he was delivering the literatures of the Goswamis from the king of Vishnupur via Hambiya, and which he stole it. And Srinivas actually made the thief, the king, his disciple, because he was just so touched by Srinivas's purity and power. So Srinivasacharya was preaching over Bengal, and he was holding mass sankirtans amongst all people, and he was spreading the teachings of the Goswamis. And it was just again emphasized that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has specifically blessed Srinivasacharya even before his birth, so that he could actually preach in that way he was doing. And also a very important part of his work is that he wrote the prayer to the six Goswamis, which is a very, very wonderful prayer. I was thinking maybe I have enough time to quickly read the translation. Maybe everybody can read it for themselves there, because this is such a beautiful meditation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. It is just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular both with the gentle and with the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, the names I mentioned. They are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very much enriched in understanding of Lord Chaitanya, and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of the sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of liberation. I offer my respectful obeisances under the six Goswamis, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted loincloth, treating themselves as mendicants, but they are always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and bathe always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were always engaged in worshipping Radha Krishna in the transcendental land of Vrindavan, where there are beautiful trees full of fruits and flowers which have under their roots all valuable jewels. The Goswamis are perfectly competent to bestow upon the living entities the greatest boon of the goal of life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and bowing down in a scheduled measurement. In this way, they utilized their valuable lives in executing these devotional activities. They conquered over eating and sleeping, and were always meek and humble, and chanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were sometimes on the banks of the Radhakund lake or the shores of the Yamuna, and sometimes at Vansivat. They appeared just like madmen and in the full ecstasy of love of Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were chanting very loudly everywhere in Vrindavan, shouting, Queen of Vrindavan, Radharani, O Lalita, O son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhan? Are you on the trees on the banks of the Yamuna? Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness. So it's a very, very beautiful prayer written by Srinivasacharya. You can read it in his honor. So that's all I wanted to say about him. And we come quickly now to Gopastami, which is a very, very beautiful festival, actually. It's not really celebrated here. But last year I was in Vrindavan, and one morning, I didn't really know which day it was, and one morning I came to take darshan. And I was thinking that Radharani looks a bit strange, because Radharani wasn't wearing a crown. She was wearing a turban. And I look further at Radharani and I notice that she doesn't wear a skirt. She was wearing a dhoti. And I was a little bit confused, because like in all the temples I've been before, they haven't celebrated Gopastami in that way. So I got to know that it is Gopastami. And that there's a reason that Radharani is dressed like that. So there's two stories actually related to it, which I quickly talk about. So the Gopastami day is the first day when Krishna is put in charge of the cows. So he's not anymore herding the cows. He's leaving Puganda age, and now he's been put in charge of the cows. And everyone, like especially Mother Yashoda, has a big argument with Nanda Maharaj, because she thinks that Krishna is just too small to do it. And Nanda Maharaj finally convinces her that Krishna will be fine. But everybody else is still worried. Because and it's not just that he's looking after the cows, also it's the first time that Krishna is actually leaving the village. So before, even when he was herding the calves, he was not quite far away. He was always kind of inside. He was just in the outskirts. But this time he will go right into the forest. So he will leave the vision of all. And while he's leaving the forest, everyone is following him. The birds, the animals, everyone is running after Krishna. All the gopis try to run after him. They're lifting up the skirts. Therefore, you see actually in Mayapur, you see the feet of all the manjaris as well, because they're lifting up the skirts, because they have to run through the high grass to follow Krishna out of the village. And if you like, you can read the pastime of killing of Dhenukasura, because this is exactly the day when he reaches that age, and he starts herding the first time the cows. Straight away he gets attacked by the demon. They don't wait. And there's Srimad Bhagavatam 10.15.2. And this related, there's this particular verse about the Gopastami quoted in the purport. So the verse says, Shukadev Goswami said, when Lord Ram and Lord Krishna attained the age of Puganda, 6 to 10, While living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon the marks of their lotus feet. Prabhupada, Lord Krishna wanted to encourage his cowherd boyfriends, who had been swallowed by Agasura and then stolen by Lord Brahma. Therefore, the Lord decided to bring them into the palm tree forest called Talavan, where there were many delicious ripe fruits. Since Lord Krishna's spiritual body had apparently grown slightly in age and strength, the senior men of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, decided to promote Krishna from the task of herding calves to the status of a regular cowherd boy. He would now take care of the full-grown bulls, cows and oxen. Out of great affection, Nanda Maharaj had previously considered Krishna too small and immature to take care of full-grown cows and bulls. It is stated in the Kartika Mahatmya section of the Padma Purana, Shuklasmanitami Kartikitu Smita Gupastami Budai Tadinat Vasudevo Bud Gopa Purvam Tu Vatsapa. The eighth lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartik is known by the authorities as Gopastami. From that day, Lord Vasudev served as a cowherd, whereas previously he had tended the calves. The word Padai indicates that Lord Krishna blessed the earth by working on her surface with his lotus feet. The Lord wore no shoes and other foot gear, but walked barefoot on the forest, giving great anxiety to the girls of Vrindavan, who feared that his soft lotus feet would be injured. And there's another quick story to it. And that is, the story is called Subal Chakavesh, which means Subal's dress. So Krishna had a meeting with Radharani, and Radharani didn't turn up. So Krishna is in great anxiety, and Subal, his very close friend, is coming, and he's asking Krishna, what's the problem with you? Why are you so upset? And Krishna says, oh, you know, Radharani didn't turn up. So Subal says, oh, I just gonna see what happened. So he goes to Radharani's house, and the first person he sees out there is Jatila. And Jatila is Radharani's mother-in-law. So Radharani is married to Abhimanyu, as you know. And Jatila doesn't like her being with Krishna, obviously. So Jatila tries to chase away Subal. And she says, wherever you guys are, Krishna is hanging around too. So you better get off this property here. And Subal doesn't listen. He says, oh, Mataji, my calf ran this way. So she says, all right, just be quick. So Subal quickly runs up to Radharani's room. And he says, Radharani, why are you not coming? Krishna is in great anxiety. He wants to see you. And Radharani says, oh, you know, Subal, Jatila, she just doesn't let me go. So the interesting thing is that Subal looks pretty much identical to Radharani. They have the same complexion, the face looks the same, they look identical pretty much. So Subal says, well, you take my dhoti, I take your skirt, and you run out, okay? And Radharani says, well, how are you going to do this? I have a different shape, my dear. I'm a girl. And Subal says, that's all right, just take one of the calves and just put it in front of you and hold it like that and run off. So they change clothes. And Radharani runs out of the house, and Jatila kind of looks at him with a, you know, screwed up look. And Radharani says, thank you, Mataji, thank you, found the calf. And holds the calf and runs to Krishna. And also, you know, so she's wearing dhoti and showing her lotus feet. So usually, actually, in Gopastami, you see Radharani's lotus feet. So that's all I wanted to say. Is there any comments, any questions, any corrections or anything? No? Okay, thank you all for your attention. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Yeah.